You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television and Tyler Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Well, I landed on the ground, kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
Right now. At www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on his cypress knee, and he was talking to Moxie and Joe. Well, the party they're gonna have out in the St. John's Swamps. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Descarty. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, good evening, everybody. This is Marco Bill. Tom and his group are on their way on an expedition, and it just so happened just prior to the show here, they're going through the mountainous area. And they have very bad phone reception. I couldn't keep it even just to talk to them. So what we decided to do was I'll just host the show with, of course, a lovely hostess, Becky Botello. She's on with us. Hi, Becky.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you tonight?
I'm great. I'm glad to be on the show.
Me too. Well, I'm going to try to do some little shout-outs here to some of our people. And Becky's going to give us a status of the chat room. But everybody, you know Mitch, Mitch Waite. And Mitch's mother is on her very last days right now. And he won't be on the show tonight. He's normally on every week. But he's got a. They're gonna. The family's by her side right now. She's really, really at her last, in her last moments, and for the next couple of days here. So, Mitch is going to be with her, and we send out our prayers and the well wishes to the family and all our sympathy to the family, and wish them that they can get through this. It's a very sad thing to lose your parent, and I hope that they can get through it without much grief. They're going to have grief, everybody. I even have grief right now. Also, we have Jody's knee operation. She has been really having a lot of problems with her knees. And so if anybody can, just a little prayer out there. We'll give a little prayer out to Jody so she feels a little better. Other than that, what do you say, Becky? Who's in the chat room tonight?
Well, we've got about 15 people so far. And we got, I don't know if I'm saying this right, Ader, it's A-dash, Ader?
Don't worry about it. You just do the best you can.
And we got Bill Green. Hi, Bill. And Dave Mandy and Dave-O. Hi, Dave. Dime Slime. And we've got Gentle Giant. We have Kenny. And we have, well, you know, my screen's messing up on me right now. Mount Monadnack? I'm not sure how to pronounce that. I'm not sure who that is. And Navajob and a guest. We have three guests, numbered guests, and I'm not sure who that is at this point. But
okay.
We have quite a few people in there, and looks like everybody's having a pretty good conversation.
Super. Well, I'd say hi to all of our good folks out there in the chat room, and hi to all you listeners out there. We wish you the very best. I hope you all had a wonderful 4th of July. It was a pretty good day to, a pretty good weekend to celebrate. It seemed like, I guess it was pretty hot all over, but in San Diego it was really nice. So I couldn't vouch for the rest of the country, but... it was nice here, and we had some absolutely phenomenal fireworks, a lot of good stuff. Well, tonight we've got a room full of guests here, good guys. Becky, Richard Stubbstadt is going to be on. He wants to tell us about DNA, and you folks in the chat room, if you got any questions for Richard as far as DNA goes, and one little announcement, we're not going to... say anything about anything on the show about anybody. I really don't believe in that. I don't believe in broadcasting bad things about other people, and I don't think we should do that. And we're not. And so what we're going to do is we're going to continue on with our shows and our people, wonderful people that we have here, and. And Richard is going to talk to us tonight about DNA and all the different testing and that stuff. And if anybody in the chat room or you guys got any questions on it, fire them up to Becky. And Richard, are you there, my friend?
I sure am. Am I live now?
You are live, my friend. You are live.
Here I am.
How you been doing?
Should I continue?
Oh, of course, of course. When I talked to you, you were going to try to take us through so we can understand DNA testing and DNA process and what is, you know, what DNA is. You know what I'm talking about? Some of the bare essentials and stuff. And you are just absolutely phenomenal. I've talked to you a few times at great lengths about it. And you really have a way of being able to describe it. The proper way that people understand.
Well,
you have the floor, Richard. You have the floor, my friend.
Okay, thanks. I haven't been on the show for some time talking about DNA, over a year. And at the time, we were just getting started with a project that a lot of people have contributed samples to. And I better go back to square one and say that DNA is what got me interested in this subject 2 years ago. In August of 2009, in fact, when I realized that, you know, there were all these eyewitness accounts and so forth, but I did not believe in the existence of the creature called Sasquatch. And then my cousin encouraged me to read up on it, and I read Jeff Meldrum's book, Sasquatch Meets Science or something like that, and the last chapter dealt with DNA. And I thought, holy smokes, you know, here we've got something that we could use without killing one of these things, assuming they even exist in the first place. And I was surfing through the internet and found a web page that showed a sample of something that had blood on it that supposedly came from a Sasquatch. And it was on Searching for Bigfoot, Inc. Website, and I sent an email to Tom Viscardi, and he called me back within 10 minutes and said, oh, you know, you got a good idea there. Let's look at the DNA. And then one thing led to another, and pretty soon we were involved in a DNA study together with a lot of other people in Texas. And what I'm going to report on is I was only involved in the beginning of the study, and I'll report on what I know and not what I don't know. What happened was there's two kinds of DNA. There's mitochondrial DNA and nuclear DNA. The nuclear DNA is what makes us who we are and what makes any creature who he is. It's a map of coming from half from your mother and half from your father that basically turns you into a person or a bear or whatever, and your attributes or your characteristics come partly from your mom and partly from your dad. That's the DNA that's usually used for identifying people in a crime or identifying, you know, your parents or whether you're related to this person or that person. But for species identification, usually the mitochondrial DNA is used. And that's the part that I'm going to talk about tonight, because in almost all cases, people start an investigation of a new species or a new hominid by testing the mitochondrial DNA. So if the mitochondrial DNA tests out bear, for example, and it's a little bit different from other bears, then, well, maybe you've identified a new bear, a new type of bear. For example, there'll be a difference between a grizzly bear and a black bear in the mitochondrial DNA. And where the mitochondrial comes from is from your ancient ancestral grandmother. And that can go back tens of thousands of years. And for some reason, everybody carries this around, and it's passed from mother to mother to mother ad infinitum until it comes to you. And if you're a male, that mitochondrial DNA dies when you die, but any sisters you have, it will live on in their offspring and so forth. And the mitochondrial DNA doesn't seem to determine what your personality characteristics are. It just determines it's supposed to determine your genus or your, you know, what you are, whether you're a bear, a human being, or a donkey, or a horse, or whatever. And so when previous researchers had been testing, people always test the mitochondrial first. It's easier, it's more prevalent, and it's a shorter string. It's only I say 16,569 pairs long, and so it's much easier to test and much less costly. And most researchers that have worked on the mitochondrial of supposed Sasquatch samples previously have only tested the mitochondrial. And 95% of the time, or even more, for some reason, it comes out 100% Homo sapiens. In other words, modern humans. And so most researchers have kind of written that off, thinking that, well, that was either a hoax or a misidentification, or that particular hair follicle came from, well, somebody's head, and because that's why it's coming out Homo sapiens. A good example of that was the Snow Grove Lake incident from 2008 or so, when Jeff Meldrum and Kurt Nelson went up there and collected some blood from a piece of wood that had been at the doorstep of this cabin, and something stepped on it and left some blood on the screws that were sticking through it. And they tested that at the University of Minnesota, and it came up Homo sapiens, lo and behold. And Dr. Nelson, I think, felt that this was actually a mistake, and it probably was not from the Sasquatch. And I sort of said, wait a second, you know, let's just see what happens. So one of the samples that Tom Biscardi brought over to Dr. Ketchum was tested, and we tested, instead of just testing part of the mitochondrial genome, we tested the whole thing, 16,569 pairs, and it came up Homo sapiens. Homo sapiens sapiens. And Dr. Ketchum was a little bit discouraged because she thought that maybe this was a good sample, and yet it didn't come up as anything different from some of us. And I said, wait a second, let's test some more. And so we tested, in fact, two other mitochondrial samples from different areas and different researchers. Well, the second one came up, Homo sapiens sapiens, again. And I took a look at this, and I said, well, wait a second, Dr. Ketchum, look at this. They're from the same haplogroup. They're only five pairs apart out of 16,569. What are the odds that you're going to get two Homo sapiens that are both hoaxes, one from the Northeast and one from the Southwest, and they both come out related to each other, not like cousins, but from the same tribe, so to speak. And so I calculated it using statistical methods and the database called GenBank. I calculated the odds that these could be hoaxes, and it came out something like 2% odds that they could be hoaxes, and they could have randomly selected some human being and it happened to match up that well, and 98% certain that Sasquatch exists. So I was already satisfied after the first two samples that this thing existed and it was part Homo sapiens. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that Sasquatch is necessarily a modern human. Because remember, the mitochondrial only comes from your ancestral grandmother. In other words, tens of thousands of years ago, wherever you originally came from Eve, so to speak, that's where the mitochondrial DNA comes from. But so then the project moved into testing nuclear DNA, and at that point I haven't been involved, so I don't know what the nuclear came out. So there's two or three possibilities. One is that the nuclear DNA is some form of ancient human, such as a Stone Age human or some kind of hunter-gatherer from the Stone Age. And they have combined with other old humans, because some of these go as far back as over 15,000 years ago, and they have evolved into what is Sasquatch today. Another possibility is it was a completely different hominid from Homo sapiens, such as Neanderthal, or the New Denisova Cave examples that have been recently sequenced. And they mated with a modern human at the time, 15,000 years ago, and what resulted was Sasquatch, and that would be called a hybrid, that's a viable hybrid that can reproduce. That's a possibility. I hate to say this, but I just don't know the answers, and we'll have to wait till either Dr. Ketchum's study comes out and reports something, or another study. There's one or two other studies going on now, and maybe another one could start soon, and everybody's pretty excited about this DNA approach, and so we may have some answers within, I don't know, Dr. Ketchum seems to think within months or within weeks, and I don't know if it's that quick, but within a year or two, we should have some answers about not only whether Sasquatch exists, but what's its nature, where'd it come from, how many different tribes or haplotypes are there of the Sasquatch out there.
Wow.
Now, a quick summary of where we're at, that's to my knowledge, and that was as of last October or November 2010, and since then I have no more data to report on.
Well, Richard, how many samples were you involved with?
Four.
Four samples?
Yeah.
My gosh. Well, that's pretty significant.
Well, and now my understanding is that Dr. Ketchum has 100 samples. So.
Oh, my gosh.
I know about four,
mm-hmm.
and only I only know a lot about three, and one I know a little bit about, not much. And then supposedly there's another 96 samples or more that she saw.
Oh, my gosh. It's quite a few.
Mm-hmm.
My God. Well, that is a really, really enlightening. So you were convinced, right?
I'm personally convinced to the tune of
98%.
I usually say 97 in case my calculations were a little off. 97% convinced, because I can tell you right now that the two researchers that submitted the first two samples were not associated with one another.
My gosh.
Quite to the contrary.
Wow. But that's kind of neat. I mean, before that, now we had several other samples that were submitted to different labs as well, and some of the results came back. But as you know, sometimes the labs have they don't want to jeopardize their reputation for science, I guess. So they're not gonna commit themselves to one way or another to a species, I guess. Is that correct?
That's correct. You got to remember that most of these labs are publicly funded. They're university labs and so forth, and they get research grants. And if they're researching something that the government or whatever is interested in, for example, let's say you found some old American Indian relic remains someplace in Minnesota, for example. Well, you know, they're all for testing the DNA and figuring out what tribe they belong to and what their origins are and all that, and these places can get grants for that. However, Sasquatch being not accepted by the scientific community whatsoever, in fact, it's poo-pooed, and the government basically believing that it doesn't exist. I mean, they don't think it exists, so why should they spend money on something that doesn't exist? And it makes perfect sense. And the university is afraid that if they get embroiled in a research project like that and it doesn't pan out, they're going to lose their funding, and then they'll have to shut down. So they have good reason, you know, not to go into that.
I understand.
Lab was a private lab, so it could be done.
Yeah, and it's just misleading. And when it's misleading, it means it's not the real truth. They don't give you the whole story.
Right.
Of course, they don't want to implicate themselves into it and get themselves into a mess, like you said, a media frenzy or something else. But it is sad that it's sad that this isn't new. I'm for quite a few years now, people have been submitting samples for testing and gotten different results back. But it's just sad that the results that have come back, you'd think that after a period of time and after a number of samples, that someone, I guess, would catch on.
Well, I mean, imagine that you're in charge of UC Berkeley's lab or something, and somebody sends the
UC Davis hair, or something like that. Yeah,
UC Davis, and sends in a couple pieces of hair and follicles on the end, and you're asked to test them. Okay, you test them, and what do you get? You test the mitochondrial because you want to know the species. You test it, it comes up Homo sapiens sapiens. And you just say, this is a modern human. And you
got it.
That's it.
Right.
And they
that's
have,
it. Right?
That's what they found.
Right.
And
I understand,
they think you've misidentified it. But what happens
if
you get two in a row that you get essentially cousins?
Right. Well, gosh. Becky, did you have a question for Richard?
Well, actually, yeah, I did. Thank you. I have a question coming from the chat room here, and Dave, Mandy, and Andrew asking some really, really good questions. And what I'd like to ask, or what these people are asking, is what parts of the country did the samples come from? And I know one of them came out of originally out of Montana, but I'm not sure about the others.
The one that I know which one you're referring to out of Montana,
mm-hmm.
and at the time I left the project, that particular one, to my knowledge, hadn't even been tested. And the sample one was out of the Southwest, and because I don't want to get into any blame games here. I'm kind of just saying,
sure,
Western United States, and mm-hmm. suffice it to say that's where it was. And the mm-hmm. second one was the northeastern United States, between 1 and 2,000 miles away, and also gathered in 2009. Both of them were gathered sometime within months of each other in 2009. And,
my goodness.
And they were from two different research organizations, and both of which I believe were credible samples based mm-hmm. on circumstantial evidence, like footprints and things like that.
Yeah, I kind of read the same thing. And so I had kind of a question where you were kind of headed down that road anyway, that are we to know pretty much for sure that this idea of this creature being a North American ape is no longer, you know, valid anymore, and that we may actually be looking at what you would call an erectus sapien hybrid?
Could be that. It could be just a normal feral human that basically survived since the Stone Age. It could be a hybrid, as I've said. Like you said, it could be, you know, Homo erectus, Homo sapiens hybrid. It could be a Denisova cave Homo sapiens hybrid. But all that, you know, a lot of people who are still working with Dr. Ketchum have criticized me. But I'm just speculating. I don't know the answers. All I know is that 3 out of 3 mitochondrial sequences were 100% Homo sapiens. And that doesn't mean that all 100 of them are that. It's
mm-hmm.
that there's several versions of the Sasquatch out there.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Rugg from the Bigfoot Museum there in Santa Cruz or around Santa Cruz somewhere, he believes there's about 3 or 4 different versions of Sasquatch.
I've heard that also.
Yeah. So, you know, 3 samples is not a lot. And so I just want to say that I believe Sasquatch exists, and I can't prove it because for science, 97% is not good enough. It's got to be 100%, and it's got to be verified. And I'm afraid that even if Dr. Ketchum comes up with 100% certain proof, that if it's not verified by other researchers, it may be poo-pooed. I mean, that's what happened when Einstein came up with his theory, a special theory of relativity. It wasn't accepted until it was brought into the Max Planck himself, and he supported and said, this guy is right. And they ran experiments and found out that Einstein's theory of relativity was correct, and Isaac Newton was incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
It takes quite a bit to change their minds. I mean, scientists are notoriously defensive about their current beliefs.
I've been reading some of this. I see exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I did have
Go ahead.
I had a really interesting question, just really quick. I know we're trying to move along, but I read that there is that these laboratories have only DNA from 3 hominids, and one is the Homo sapiens and the Neanderthal, and then this. How do you pronounce that? Denisova.
Denisova cave, and they call them Denisovans.
I have no idea. I'm kind of in the dark with that. I'm not sure what that is.
In 2010, some relics were found in a cave in Russia, and the cave is called Denisova Cave. I don't know what.
Got it.
And normal Homo sapiens were found in that, but they found some strange-looking teeth, and I think it was a bone from a finger of a small individual that did not have the anatomical characteristics of either Homo sapiens or Homo neanderthalensis. And so they tested it, and one of the researchers called another one and then said, are you sitting down? He says, we've identified a new hominid. And it was twice as different from us as Neanderthal is. And it's now produced a scientific paper that's been peer-reviewed, and it's widely accepted now that once on this Earth there was a hominid walking around, especially in Asia, that was called, you know, that we're calling Denisovan. And not only that, they're related to the Papua New Guinea population of what are they called, South Sea Islanders, and they're not related to any of us.
I'm not sure. I'm trying to go back in my mind. I know I've been doing a lot of reading on some of this stuff lately.
Running well, just a little bit late right now. I got but Richard, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. You got to come on again if you don't mind. This is a very interesting subject, and I'm sure a lot of people, once we're done here, will have all kinds of questions. We'll try to hone them in for you, but thank you for coming on the show and taking us through it again. I know it's been over a year since you've been on and done that.
Yeah.
And
Do you want to mute me out, or should I mute myself up?
You can mute yourself out if you like.
Okay, I'll do it.
Thank you, Richard.
Talk to you later.
Well, everybody, Richard Stubbsett, and what a guy, man. He is. He's done just a wonderful job on doing this. Now we got our good friend Don Sherman from Minnesota out there. Don, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Don. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm glad to be on your show again, Bill.
We're happy to have you, Don. I'm not going to waste any time, but what I wanted to do, everybody, Don has got some more recent events and things that have taken place there, and I asked him if he'd come on the show and share them with us. He's up in Minnesota, around the ballpark area, Deer River Ballpark and all that area is, I guess, your active area, right?
Yeah, Don? Deer River and Ball Club. That's Ball Club.
Ball club, what is it, ballpark? I'm thinking hot dogs, but
well, they serve hot dogs at ball clubs, too.
Yeah, right. Well, I should know. My family had their reunion out there. So. But why don't you go ahead, Don, and tell us what's going on?
Okay, I've met some Bigfoot enthusiasts that have been checking some areas out, and they contacted me, and actually the area I've been checking out actually south of Deer River in Ball Club area, and they've been having some activities. Actually, a couple weeks ago, there was a guy in the deer stand. He was out most of the night and hearing loud vocalizations and stuff, and about 4 o'clock in the morning he was in deer stand and he was pounding rocks together, and he had his quarter with him and stuff, and he actually could hear one walking around. He started pounding his rocks and he actually heard this rock come flying at him. He heard it, said it was a kind of a whizzing sound. All of a sudden this rock hit him in the side of the rib cage. It just about knocked him out of the deer stand.
Oh, man.
And scared the heck out of him, so he got the heck out of there, and that was about, I'd say, about 4 o'clock in the morning. And that was on Friday. Friday, that would be actually Friday morning.
Man.
And so I met another guy that was coming up from Iowa. We met out to that place there, and he's been checking out the areas, and he's actually discovered some... actually, 3 Indian mounds, and that's where they've been hanging around. And the Indian mounds have not been documented or anything, so I don't think anybody really knows about them.
Wow.
And so he's actually found a cave, and so we're going to go back out and soon here, as soon as the weather gets a little bit, just a little cool. It's pretty hot right now.
Yeah.
We're going to check out the cave area, and he's actually been inside the cave. You can actually stand up in it a little bit. So they actually looks like they've been digging, or actually it's a man-made, it's a cave that's been dug out, and you can actually stand inside of it, and you can actually see, he said, like, bedding and stuff like that, where these Bigfoot's been either spending some time or using it as sleeping quarters. And so, yeah, that's been pretty exciting. So we're getting pretty anxious to go back out there again.
Wow.
And
so, yeah, you and Bob are doing that?
I'm sorry, what?
You and Bob Olson?
Yeah, me and Bob are going to be going out there.
Super.
I've been out there a couple of nights now, but the bugs are so bad. But I've actually heard some vocalizations, some screams and howls and stuff, and so it's been pretty exciting.
Wow.
And the person that I've been talking to, he has been coming to this area for the past 3 years, and he's actually seen a family of them. He saw a small young one, And it's like they weren't even afraid of him. They were acting small when it was making kind of a, I don't know, kind of a chuckling or sound.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the female was there also. And then there was a male came out of the woods. And this male actually was, I don't know if it was getting protective or what, but it started walking towards him.
Huh.
And so he got a little scared about the situation because he didn't know how aggressive this thing with this big male was going to be.
Right.
But, yeah, it's been pretty exciting.
Well, you know,
so we're looking forward to going back out there at these, the place that they're hanging around, it seems to be right around those Indian mounds.
Uh-huh.
And,
well, that's pretty neat.
Yeah. It's actually kind of nice to hear other people talking that these Bigfoots are more, they're on the, more human, not apes anymore. And that's what I've been,
yeah.
Being a Native American, you know, the medicine men actually, they've been around for hundreds of years. The Native American medicine men actually talk to these.
Oh, really?
These things.
That's right. Well, yeah.
They,
well,
they have a vocabulary.
Yeah. Well,
actually,
you know, that's about the fourth or fifth time I've heard that, too, Don.
Yeah.
And, in fact, recently, a lady, I kind of floored her because she said that the creature was talking to her, and she found out what the name was, and she's kind of laying back for a while, and she got together with a Native American, and to learn more about it, and that's what she's doing right now. Is she's laid low of, you know, her regular research, and she's learning more about them. You know, last time you were on, you had mentioned that one of the guys that you had, one of the encounters that took place was a dog face looking Bigfoot on top of a roof.
Yeah, yeah.
And more recently,
that's the one that's on the Monster Quest. They didn't tell the whole story.
Right.
They didn't tell about the one that was on the roof.
Right. Well, not more than three weeks ago, one of our guys in Georgia, northern Georgia, Dan Allen, was out with a group of people, and I guess for about an hour or more, they were looking at this group of creatures, and they got some pictures and stuff, and that were they seemed to be or looked like a dog-faced type of creature as well.
Yeah.
And then our next guest that's coming on right after us, his son, last year, he's from West Virginia, and he's seen had a visual encounter of a wolf-looking Bigfoot. So, I mean, that's it's getting more and more. Now, you know, before this, most of the time when you heard about this, about a dog face or you know, Bigfoot with fangs and all that stuff, was from Wisconsin or from Canada.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of incidents that took place there. Of course, in Wisconsin, the Beast of Bray Road has been there for years, and they've had lots of stories. Linda Gray had written a book about it, and she had a book about it, and she's been doing a lot of research on it for years. But anyway, it was really interesting when you brought it up. And then more interesting, in less than a month, I have another encounter with a creature that looks like that.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. There was a Native American guy that from the Cass Lake area that had an encounter. He was camping out in the woods. He was standing in his camp where next to his fire trying to keep warm and stuff, and he felt this, I don't know if I mentioned on the show or not, but he felt this huge hand on top of his head, and it started pushing his head down, and he started squeezing the top of his head.
Oh.
So he started speaking to it in his Ojibwe language, and he started praying in Ojibwe to this thing. He knew what it was. He was actually, he was pretty scared, but he started speaking in Ojibwe, kept speaking as fast as he could. And all of a sudden, the hand just kind of let up, released, and then he took the hand off his head, and then he heard this thing kind of slowly walk away.
Wow.
And,
that would be an experience. I'm not sure that I'd have much left in, I don't think I have much left of a meal in my stomach. Well, Don, I want to thank you for coming on again. And, and if you don't mind, I mean, we keep in touch with you all the time, and as things transpire, by all means, give us a call. We love you.
When I find more about this investigation by these Indian mounds, I'll let you know what's happening with that. I'll keep you updated on that.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great. Well, thank you, Don, for coming on. I know you had some other issues going on here prior to this, and you made an effort to make it here, and I appreciate that very much.
Thank you very much, Bill. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, Don, thank you so much. And say hi to everybody for us over there, okay?
I will. Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
Yeah, bye.
Well, everybody, that's Don Sherman from Minnesota. And he's giving us a little overview of what's going on up there. Our next guest is, I'm having a problem with my little control panel here because I can't see the numbers, and I got to put my glasses on. But Chris Allen is with us tonight. He just got back from vacation, and by golly, Chris, are you there, my friend?
I'm here, Marco. Can you hear me?
I certainly can. And so what happens when you go on a vacation with your family, Chris? Tell us all about it.
We actually find a really nice Bigfoot track, and then that night we actually heard one up on the mountainside, and it sounded like it was throwing either giant boulders or big logs down off the hillside at us. And, he was very obvious outside of our campsite, and it rained, and the fog was so thick, you couldn't use a flashlight to see him, but you could hear him out there. By the way, Mark, I have a bunch of guests here that want to say something real quick. Guys, y'all ready?
Sure. I'm ready.
Play it.
Hi, everybody. Thank you.
That is the West Virginia Junior Bigfoot team, and they're going to say their name one by one.
Adrian Ramsey. Sierra Workman. Cassidy Ramsey. Colt Martin.
Colt Martin. Colt Austin. One of them doesn't even
know
their
name. Really cool. Oh, hey, tell them thanks. Young guys, that's what we need.
They've actually been out in the field with me several times, and we actually encountered our first Bigfoot track together. And looking with we have probably about 7 million candles watt worth of power on lights that we were shining down the railroad track, and there is a luminous eyeballed creature that was humanoid-like that actually went behind a tree and kept watching us at a distance. And without realizing what was going on, I found myself moving in the direction towards it. And you can hear it off in the woods going down to the river. And we never did see it actually up close or whatever. And we can't swear up and down that it was a Bigfoot, but we did find a Bigfoot track. And we take a large group of people that go out there, and we have some adults that will go out there with us. And all the kids that go with us have to have parents' permission to go on the hunt with us. And the parents are more than welcome to go with us. But it teaches the kids actually a lot more than just Bigfoot. It teaches them a lot of the night creatures that you'll encounter, the tracks and different things along the trail that you'll find that you may not have opportunities in your life to encounter.
Well, not only that, basic navigation, all kinds of things, man.
Oh, yeah, we get to see all kinds of stuff. We go out there with laser pointers and just look around, and it's quite interesting for the kids to go out there and do that.
Oh, wow. So it was a... You heard a lot of noises and a lot of rustling around?
Yes, we did. And we were actually in Cumberbo, which I'm sure I'm pronouncing it wrong. It's the most remote state forest in West Virginia at the highest elevation. So we're near around 4,000 feet. But it's that's quite high for this area. The daytime, it stayed foggy most of the time. At nighttime, it was quite foggy as well. The highest it got up there was on one day it made 74 degrees. Fahrenheit. Most of the time it was in the mid-60s during the daytime and considerably cooler at night. Perfect environment for a Bigfoot. Actually, in my opinion, I joke around about this, that if a Bigfoot could speak, it would be like, wow, this is too far away for me. I mean, it was too remote for a Bigfoot to want to be. this is so remote. I mean, you have to drive forever to get to even fuel stops just to get your basic necessities. But it was quite interesting. It was very remote. It was a very pristine area. And the vocalization sounds that we believe that we actually had heard was very faint, but we did hear the crashing sounds where it actually sounded like it was hurtling many hundred-pound boulders or logs off the hillside at us.
Gosh.
The storm was actually so loud that it came in about a half hour after we heard this. I'm not sure if it was just the energy in the air that may have made this... I'm not sure why he was being aggressive sounding towards where we're camped at, but the storm, when it actually came in, it thundered so loud that I think I jumped over my son. it literally scared the hell. We all jumped. I mean, probably could have set a record on how high we jumped.
Well, you heard what Don Sermon said, right?
Yes, I did. Great. That
he hit him in a tree. Well, what Don didn't tell, he told me, but what he didn't say on the show was that guy went to the hospital the next day, and it was pretty serious hit on his rib cage.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, he was saying that. I was feeling for him because I've had him throw rocks at me the same way that would have killed me if it would have hit me.
Well, I was going to say, your encounter went in a tree, right?
Well, my first encounter was a tree. I mean, I watched
the young
one.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, I watched him just sitting on a tree branch about the size of my thigh. He just sat there for almost an hour just observing us humans and not slightly concerned that we're down there. A good number of us had gathered in the yard to watch this creature. And he wasn't concerned and had perfect balance sitting there. He was close to the stalk part of the upper part of a tree with a branch coming out where it met where it branched off from the tree itself. And it just sat there, and it was more concerned about picking at its arm than it was us.
Wow. Just something else.
Yeah. The movement of it, you know, I like to say that the more adult encounters that I've had were more manlike. But this one was more ape-like. It sat there acting more just like an ape in a zoo would do, like a spider monkey or, you know, a chimpanzee or something.
Right. Well, it's amazing. Did you listen to Richard's DNA overview? Isn't that pretty neat?
That was very interesting.
He is just absolutely phenomenal when he can break it down into pieces and in all the right stuff, and it makes it easily understood. He explains it all.
You know, Mark, I can sit there for countless hours. I love to be at a campfire with this guy that was on the show just to talk to him. I mean, I love to talk to somebody with full of knowledge like that.
Mm-hmm. I know. Well, we'll have him on some more. Yes,
Bill, can I interrupt? Can I interrupt for just a second?
Absolutely.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. It's nice to talk to you. Hey, I had a question from Richard Substad. He's in the chat room right now, and he's wanting to know if you had any pictures of the Sasquatch in a tree. I've heard you tell me that amazing story over and over and over, and he's just asking if you had any pictures of that at all, if you ever got a chance.
You know, it always ends up that when you have a large number of people, you have to be at the situation to see this. If you witness something encountered like a UFO or something,
right?
Most people aren't going to run upstairs and get their camera out and just go out and take pictures of it. Now we had a video camera that was upstairs, so somebody would have had to take 5-10 minutes of something that you may never encounter again and go get it and then come back out. I don't know. I can't explain to anybody because I was only like 8 years old when this happened. So. And back then, too, the cameras were quite large. It wasn't just like whipping out a cell phone from your pocket because I was a little child.
Well, I know that happened to me. I actually, one of my sightings that actually happened, and I had a camera with me, and I was so shocked when it actually happened that I completely zoned out. It's almost like I had completely forgotten that I had a camera in my purse because I was so taken with shock that this thing had walked right behind my car that... It was after I calmed down, I was like, oh, my Lord.
Yeah,
I couldn't even get that picture because the camera was sitting right there, and I totally forgot.
Back in 1996, when I did my first album, I was in Nashville, where I lived at for almost 16 years. And I had to go out to talk to this famous rodeo rider. He was a rodeo clown, actually. And he was on the pro circuit, and he was going to be in my first video off the album called She's a Cowboy's Dream. And it ended up that we went to this place. I grew up in Texas. I thought I knew a lot about bulls, etc. I was so mistaken. This bull actually was inbred to be very vicious, mean. It was part of Longhorn, and I'm not sure what else it was part of, but, you know, probably the devil himself. This bull took off running. I jumped out of my Jeep, and I'm standing there, you know, like 30 feet from the fence, and this bull took off running at that fence and rammed into the fence. I couldn't stand, I couldn't even move. I mean, most people would just jump under their vehicle and hide or something. I just stood there and watched it, and all of a sudden the owner came out there and said, if you want to live, you better get away from that fence now. Well, there's not much of a difference when you're encountering a Bigfoot that may be, you know, in a situation you can't outrun it.
No.
You can't outclimb it. You know, what can you do? I mean, you try to defend yourself any way you can, but a lot of people actually would just stand there. You don't think about taking your camera out. Now, today's technology has drastically changed from back then when I was a child with my first encounter at the age of 8. I've seen roughly 8 Bigfoot since the age of 8. Mm-hmm. And I've been in 46 states looking for Bigfoot, and I've had countless hundreds of near encounters with Bigfoot, from vocalization, talking outside my tent, to actually aggressive behavior of throwing huge, like Nerf football-sized rocks. I mean, just that, I'm guessing 120 miles an hour or faster, that would take a bark. Yeah, they would take, I don't know, you got to consider that when you take a baseball pro player throwing a ball, you know, close to 100 miles an hour, we're talking about a lightweight baseball. I'm talking about a rock bigger than a Nerf football came hurtling, hit the tree right next to me, and took thick bark off the tree, just completely removed the bark. If that rock would have hit me, there would have been nothing of me left to talk about.
Wow.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on, my friend. Hey, do
you're
me a favor.
Welcome.
Can
sure.
you do me a favor? Make a picture of those little Bigfoot, your little Bigfoot team, your junior Bigfoot team, and
guys,
send me a picture. I want to post that on the website.
He wants to post a picture on the website, so we'll take a picture tonight and send it to him, okay? Everybody say goodnight, Marco Bill.
Hey, Chris, thank you so much for your time. We'll
good night, Chris.
With you.
Good night.
Good night, Mel.
Good night.
Well, everybody, that was Chris Allen. And now we got Bruce Schilt to come on here, and I got to unmute him. My little control panel is a little bit behind here. Good evening, Bruce. Hello, Bruce. How are you, my friend?
Well, hello, Marco. How's everybody out there in the Bigfoot world?
Bigfooting, I'm telling you. There's a lot of Bigfoots going on, buddy. You heard? Did you hear Don Sherman?
Yeah, I sure did. Oh, that was terrific.
Yeah, and did you notice, remember when we had the other guy on, he was talking about Medicine Men? And he was talking about the, the language speaking and other things like that that they were doing.
Yeah.
And he's mentioned the same thing. And this most current thing is around what they think is Indian mounds. So that's pretty neat. I'd like to find more out about that. Tell us what's going on in your area.
Let's see, 4th of July was on Larson Butte. We found 2 praying mounds. This is the ridge where the Bigfoots travel down?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if it has anything to do with Bigfoots or nothing, but there are 2 praying, or 3 praying mounds. And Donna, Little Bruce, and Tony Ray have all got their pictures taken in them. But
wow.
This, 4th of July, and just today, we just got back at 8 o'clock. We went Bigfoot hunting. We went up on Durham, where they're putting in a new pipeline for fresh water for browning.
And, yeah.
The night crew that was working all night, they quit because every night or every other night there's a Bigfoot up there right now as we're speaking. He's up there scaring those workers off at night. He's screaming at them and So none of the workers will work there tonight, at night anymore.
Oh, wow. What did anybody see it or get a chance to see it, or is it just some really horrible noises?
Well, this is just fresh off the press, you know, and I'm still investigating.
Oh, you're investigating it. I'm sorry. Yes.
So I'll let you know what I find out. But,
my gosh. Well, that's pretty interesting. I mean, there's a lot of... Can you imagine this? In the past 2 weeks, 3 weeks, some of the emails that we've gotten... the people couldn't be on the show, but I mean, we got emails from people who had sightings. I mean, almost, it's just all over. And I'm not talking about one place. I'm talking all over. You know, encounters and in sightings and things going on. It's really something else. It's really active right now.
I listened to very closely to Tom. Because everything he says is coming true, you know. And I think he's the number one man on the totem pole, for Bigfoot. And he says it like it is. It's always true.
Yeah. That's where they're heading now. we couldn't be on tonight. He wanted to be on. He called me just prior to the show to tune in, and we just couldn't get a good phone reception. It was just too bad, and it just was really, really bad reception. Kept cutting out, dialing in, so we just decided to, we just forego it, because it was another 2 hours that he had to go through that. So.
Marco, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Down south, are there three-toed Sasquatch or Bigfoot?
Well, there has been a couple of incidents where they had like a three-toed cast and all that stuff. Yeah, I'm familiar with a couple of incidents of that. Yes,
are they different species? Or, I mean, not species, but
well, yeah, different feet. It's a three-toed type of a foot, and I mean, it's really weird. I mean, they got casts of it, and it's really something else. I mean, nothing amazes me anymore because, I mean, in the past 5 years or 6 years that we've been, I've been with Tom and you guys, and at first we thought it was just like, the Patterson type of a Bigfoot, right? But my God, there's so many different, different species, it seems like, of this creature.
Oh, yeah.
And dog-faced, smaller. Larger, my God. So, I mean, it's hard to discern, you know.
Well, we don't know if they're inbred or not. That's what we heard, that they were inbreds. I don't know if that's true.
Well, I don't know if anybody knows it's true. But, I mean, there's a lot of different theories, I'm going to tell you that. And there's a lot of different kinds of... things. I mean, the most probable one is the standard one we think about, right?
Yeah.
More recently, we've had more of this dog-faced one in the last 2 years, more than any other time that I can remember. And in different parts of the country. I mean, West Virginia. Where was this other one? Where Jan was when they seen theirs, Mississippi, I think, somewhere. My God, I can't believe it. Well, Bruce, thanks for coming on and sharing with us, good guy.
Uh-huh.
And let us know what comes out on this on your investigation with the night crew and everything, and see if maybe there was some people that had a visual encounter as well.
Oh yeah,
be kind of neat. Yeah.
Yeah, the crew that works up there, I'll have to get a hold of some of them, but I'll try to dig into it a little more. And my uncle, he tracked a three-toed Bigfoot up here in Montana, too. So,
really? Oh, yeah. Well, super.
Yeah.
So there's somebody else that's got a three-toed print that they're looking at.
Yeah, there was a five-toe and a three-toe.
Really?
Side by side. Oh, so
Wow. God, I tell Tom about that. It's pretty neat. That's really neat. Yeah, the places where I seen it, Tom, was down. It was further down south, but that's something else. That's pretty good. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Bruce. And as always, it's time to close our show. But I want to thank you from the bottom of our heart for coming on here and being being part of our Bigfoot family, like the rest of these folks out here. Becky.
Okay.
Okay, Bruce.
Go ahead. Indian Day starts tomorrow, so if you guys can get up this way, it's sure a big celebration.
Oh yeah, that is. How many days? How many days is it?
Days.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Wow.
Working, but it'll be good.
Evening.
Oh yeah. Well, we'll put the word out. Thank you, and to say hi to Donna and everybody for us. And God bless you.
God bless you and everybody that needs prayer. You know, we'll pray for them.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, Mitch and Jody both need some prayers right now. They're in a hurting status. Becky,
yes.
Thank you so much. Our hostess, Becky, thank you for coming on and helping out.
Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure. And everyone out there, all I can tell you is keep Bigfooting and keep it on going. We're going to catch this little bugger pretty soon. Use this watch and see. It was getting closer and closer every day we have a show. And take care, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot Live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters.